This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear we're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America.
Welcome to the National Intel Report. Maybe you recognize this voice, maybe you don't. This is Mark Anderson. I have my Stop the Presses show on this network. I'm filling in for the fearless leader of RBN, John Stadtmiller, whose show I'm doing right now, National Intel Report, here on the 4th of June, yes, June, 2019. I'm always off a little bit. When it was May and I was doing a show in May, I wanted to say it was April. Maybe time goes too fast for me to keep up with. At any rate, I've got 2 hours to cover, so I've got to be twice as smart on this fine evening, coming to you out of Round Rock, Texas. Website, of course, republicbroadcasting.org. And I have a guest this first hour, and I'll note before I bring him on that much of this first hour and the second will be devoted to global cities, Bilderberg, Trilateral Commission, and as we go on, callers that might want to call in, especially in the second hour, about those and other topics. It'll probably end up being a pretty open-ended discussion by the time all is said and done. I also, in the second half of this first hour, I'm going to play an interesting audio clip from the Chicago Council on Global Affairs as they get ready to start their annual Pritzker Forum on Global Cities tomorrow, June 5th through June 7th, right in the wake of Bilderberg. And it is not any coincidence. Let me tell you, the cross-pollinating going on now is pretty amazing. Bilderberg is no longer kind of a deep, real secretive solo act. They've grown to be part of a network. And I pretty much uniquely among journalists point to that network more than anyone else, though others acknowledge it. At any rate, we in the alternative media have our own network, you might say, and we work together as best we can. And one of those with whom I work and collaborate is Hesher, as he's known, with Alternate Current Radio. And he's my almost co-host tonight. How you doing, Hesh?
I'm great. Thanks for inviting me to hang out with you tonight, Mark.
Yeah, it's great to hang out together, lament what's going on. It's not always good news. In fact, it usually isn't. Of course, we look for those, you know, bright areas of it and areas where we see at least a signpost towards solutions or, you know, a brighter note or cause for hope, cause for optimism, whatever. But it's pretty daunting stuff. You and I cover a lot of deep state stuff and nefarious items, looking under rocks others won't look under, peeling back the floorboards, almost like being in Edgar Allan Poe's story, The Telltale Heart. We hear the sound under the floor and we want to look and see what that is. But while I could launch into something for you to comment on, Hesher, what might be some of the issues you've been working on lately?
Well, I host a show called Boiler Room. It's a live radio show at alternatecurrentradio.com. And we totally appreciate what you just said there with the Poe reference. It's never popular to be the person that's ripping up floorboards looking for that sound, that thumping in the background, that you know there's something wrong there. You feel it causing a disturbance. And yeah, that's kind of what we do on our show. We take a sort of irreverent look at things, and we also do our best to monitor social media feeds and news feeds to sort of keep an eye on what's happening with cultural engineering, culture warfare, and similar topics. So we're interested in conspiracy news, politics, pop culture, all kinds of things, really. It's usually a roundtable discussion and fairly open and loose, a little bit light and loose. And we like to have a little bit of fun with it, because a lot of it can be very dark, black goo, black pill, bog of eternal stench sort of stuff.
Bog of eternal stench. I like that. Great name for a book. I traveled the bog of eternal stench. That'd be great. Yeah, so in other words, you and I are both conspiracy theorists here. I thought it was just me. It's you too.
Yeah, well, my co-host Spore and I were working on our tinfoil hats last night because of upcoming 5G rollout, so we're doing our best to protect ourselves here.
Yeah, and we thought the foil hats were just for fun or making a mock. They actually have a practical use. Who knew?
Yeah, no kidding.
But, well, that's great. Yeah, well, conspiracy theory is often conspiracy fact. In fact, most often it's conspiracy fact. And it's endless, of course, looking through this Bilderberg network, going into, during, and coming out of it. I was not able to go to Montreux, Switzerland, to go to this homage to the song Smoke on the Water. I would have liked to have done that. I would have probably spent more time doing that and listening to that song over and over again, rather than trying to see these Bilderbergers through high-powered binoculars, probably wearing masks and, you know, costumes as it is, you know, rubber masks like James Bond movies or something. But it necessitated me to do a lot of digging, because I didn't have to do a lot of flying and trudging around the world. So I went back to last year's reporting and looked through the Trilateral Commission website, and it's amazing to see. I forget sometimes how much these different groups collaborate. And I'm just kind of poking around here. The Trilateral Commission, and get this, Hash, this is really interesting. Usually they don't do this. In 2018, and I had a lot of tumultuous events, 2018, later that year, my dad happened to pass, and then there were other family matters and other work things pulling at my collar. I've been watching the border issue down here in Texas a lot, so it took me away from some of this Bilderberg trilateral stuff. But come to find out, the trilaterals, in what appears to be completely unprecedented, held three meetings in 1 month, last November 2018. And get this, the North American regional meeting of the Trilateral Commission, which of course is the younger sibling of Bilderberg, happened in Silicon Valley, November 16 and 17, 2018. And then two other meetings, one going on simultaneously to that, the European regional meeting of the Trilateral Commission, the very same time as the North American one at Silicon Valley, California, where all the high-tech ED platformers live. And then the third one, Asia-Pacific regional meeting of the Trilateral Commission, which include representatives of the Chinese government and their think tanks and their associations and their CFR-type groups that they have way over there. So, unprecedented. And they had a fourth meeting that same year, back in March of 2018, the annual meeting in Singapore. So European, regional, Asia-Pacific, and North American, all in November, two of them simultaneous. And then that fourth one, the basic annual meeting in Singapore earlier in the year. It's unprecedented for them to meet that much in 1 month, with two of them on top of each other. So something is very urgent these days. And I noticed they're pushing some of the same buttons as Bilderberg, especially their fear of nationalism and populism, at least those movements that they don't control, that might be pseudo-nationalist movements. We got to watch out for those. Not all populist movements are born equal. But what do you think of that, Hash? It definitely indicates an intensification doesn't it?
Indeed. It strikes me as very interesting that one of these trilateral meetings happened in California in the Silicon Valley area.
Which is a first.
Yeah, and it makes sense because if you look at what Google and Facebook and Twitter and some of the other usual suspects, I know the LinkedIn founder and the, what's that big brainiac database thing? I'll remember momentarily. But a lot of these agencies, it's funny, you know, because to use a popular term, they virtue signal so much about social justice and equality and multiculturalism, yada, yada. Yet, on the other hand, take Google, for example. They are working on a browsing platform specifically built for China called Dragonfly, last I checked up on it, which is exactly a... you know, a Chinese government, like state-controlled sort of browsing platform, which is going to function in a way that the government will have 100% access to who is saying what. You know what I mean? It's almost like all users by default will have sort of an internet ID, and you know what I mean? It's just very strange to me that they virtue signal the way that they do about multiculturalism and this kind of stuff, yet on the other hand, they're working with, you know, communist China to, you know, support them in their style of government. So it's not surprising to me that Silicon Valley is playing such a big role, and we'll probably get into what a big role they played at this year's Bilderberg. Also, oh, by the way, Palantir is the other company I was trying to think of. A big name. Maybe not everybody knows what that is, but it is a big name and a big piece of the underlying surveillance technology and situational modeling technology and many other facets, actually, too. But Silicon Valley is taking a huge role right now in shaping politics. And, you know, that also, to me, is very interesting because in the 2016 elections here in the United States, and with the Trump-Russia, you know, 2 year, what was that, 21 month, tens of millions of dollars spent, all kinds of political energy spent with that, you know, trying to somehow make it appear that Russia had influenced the elections here, which they weren't able to do. It's very interesting to me that Silicon Valley is putting so much influence into political processes around the world. We've seen tons of Palestinian accounts get removed from Facebook. We've seen a lot of conservative accounts get removed from Twitter. We're seeing a lot of conservative groups being blocked by Facebook, conservative users across platforms being shadow banned. So what Silicon Valley is doing is very upfront in everyone's faces and provable that they are influencing elections and political processes. Look what they're doing in Venezuela. I mean, I could go on and on with all of the political blockading and posturing and collusion that they're having with governments that are sanctioned by and favored by places like the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderberg Group.
Yes, what you're describing there, Hesh, drives home the point, as if it needs to be driven home anymore, that they're actually privatizing government itself. Because if you think about that, they are investing themselves with the authority to decide who can speak and who cannot, and what they can say, either as organizations or as individuals. The First Amendment is being outsourced.
Exactly, yes. And who are these Silicon Valley people to be the arbiters of truthiness, as some have coined it, or freedom, or speech, or politics? I mean, these are unelected, highly elite companies and very politicized. They are not... You know what I mean? They have very specific political agendas. If you look at the leaked video meetings of the Google, whatever they call their monthly meetings or whatever after the 2016 election. Every speaker that came up there, every high-level Google executive that came up there and spoke to that group was expressing just horror at the fact that Trump had been elected, that a conservative administration was incoming, and they spoke very candidly about how they were going to do whatever they could moving forward to do their part to make sure that, that didn't happen again. So it's a hyper-partisan group who are also very involved in cultural manipulation, cultural engineering, and these are the same people that that the trilaterals, the Bilderbergs, and on are leaning on now to tell us what news is fake, what news is real, what speech is okay, what speech is mean, what speech is hateful, and to silence any of those that don't fit into their particular identity politic, which is very, very globalist.
Yeah, and coming out of the trilateral meeting last year that I described, one of those three in November, which, again, very unprecedented for them to have that many meetings practically on top of each other, coming out of that visit to Silicon Valley itself, a first for the Trilateral Commission, founded by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, the two late pillars of globalism that were instrumental in together starting the Trilats, and Rockefeller, between the two, was more instrumental in starting or nurturing along the Bilderberg Group, not necessarily starting it. But this year in Montreux, Switzerland, that just wrapped up May 30th through June 2nd for Bilderberg, the weaponization of social media was one of their admitted topics. And last year they had, in Turin, Italy, the Bilderbergers had the post-truth world. This year they also had the ethics of artificial intelligence, which is kind of on a corollary of what we're talking about, and cyber threats, another corollary of what we're talking about. And then John Hickenlooper, the former Colorado governor that went to Bilderberg last year, comes out swinging this year, maybe kind of a lightweight in the ring, but comes out swinging as a Democratic nominee or hoped for nominee for president for 2020, chortling much of what Bilderberg taught him last year. It's as if he went to school and now he's a young graduate. And now all of a sudden, John Hickenlooper, former governor of Denver, has got a foreign policy, a real spiffy little foreign policy, and he's going to come out and save the world, and he might be a welterweight, but he's going to swing hard, and he's going to do this. But, you know, you've got people like him, and you've got these topics, and they're marching forward in their privatization of government. Of course, they call it governance. They even changed the word government to governance, you know. And so they're doing exactly what you described. And, you know, when you see the Palestinians being platformed, you know, it's not just individual aberrants and flies in their ointment they don't like. Let's say Alex Jones, you know, someone that they can fairly easily target, because one man, you know, one person is Alex's friends. The next person, they view him a little less favorably. Alex is sort of bittersweet in the media world these days. He's an easy target. But, you know, they go for the Palestinian groups. They're going across the board. And they talk about the Russians influencing elections and trying to interfere with public discourse that could have a bearing on elections. Everything these people do interferes in public discourse and free speech and could have a real actual effect on elections, not just some, you know, suspected effect on elections.
Yeah, exactly. And no one wants to talk about the CIA's role in affecting elections throughout history. You can go into a real rabbit hole looking into what our so-called intelligence agencies here in the United States have done in Russia, in South America, in the Middle East, in European countries. I mean, pretty much all over the globe.
Yeah, and here we come with the break. We'll be back with more here on the National Intel Report with Hesher and myself. Stay tuned.
folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Returning to the National Intel Report, your fill-in host tonight, June 4, 2019, Mark Anderson. My normal show, regular show, Stop the Presses, runs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 2 to 3 p.m. Central Time. I've been doing it since November, and it's been a good ride. And continuing with my guest and co-host tonight, the mighty Hesh Hesher, from Alternate Current Radio. That's alternatecurrentradio.com. We're talking about the privatization of the First Amendment, the outsourcing of free speech, the deplatforming, the Trilats meeting in conjunction and collaboration, cross-pollinating with the Bilderbergers. The Bilderbergers are not just a lone wolf. And it's quite the scary thing, Hesh. Before I say anything more, I want to mention that after the next break, which, you know, we're in the short segment now, there's more ads at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to play a clip of an MP3 from a Chicago Council on Global Affairs podcast about the Global Cities Forum, the annual Global Cities Forum that the Chicago Council puts on. And that event, that Global Cities Forum, starts tomorrow, June 5th, and runs through June 7th. And I think you're going to find this very interesting, Hesh. To hear this in their own words is quite a treat, although quite disturbing. But we're really not off on this. I know there's going to be maybe new listeners or people that maybe aren't as familiar with these topics as they might be with other topics that might think, well, you guys are stretching it a bit. Of course, if mainstream listeners get a hold of our, you know, illicit material, they might think we're way out there. But if you hear these people speak for themselves, it becomes very clear that, if anything, we're maybe even understating the case.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you brought the Global Cities Initiative to a Boiler Room broadcast last year when we met in person out there in Austin during South by Southwest. And
oh, yeah, right.
You really kind of knocked our socks off by introducing this topic to us. I mean, Global Cities, it sounds good, right? It's a great name. But when it comes right down to what's actually going on at these meetings, and the kinds of things they're trying to propose that cities be able to do independent from nations, it's a little bit staggering. I mean, what do you think about it a year later now?
What I'm going to demonstrate by listening to the podcast, by playing a short clip of it, is that what I make of it is that they're slowly but surely taking the gloves off. The mask is very gradually coming off. At first, it was almost like listening to a promo for a simple foreign exchange program. Well, I'm the mayor of this city, and I'll go visit my colleague in a city overseas or even within my own country, and we'll share ideas on different things, and we'll have a youth exchange. Some of our kids will live in their country, and some of their kids will live in our country, and it'll increase mutual understanding and bring about peace, prosperity, and all sorts of lovely things. We learn about each other's governments, culture, food, music, and so on. And naturally, few of us would have any big problem with that. But now the mask is slipping off. It came off a little further a year ago, February, when the Chatham House, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which came out of the old British Roundtable groups, Cecil Rhodes, whatnot, and that, of course, is the Rhodes Scholarships. One of the Democratic candidates for president right now, Pete Buttigieg, the one euphemistically called Butt Gig. Pete Buttigieg, South Bend, Indiana mayor. He's one of the 24 or so Democratic hopefuls for the 2020 presidential nomination. He's a Rhodes Scholar. Anyway, Chatham House says in a 2018 program, February 2018, attended, by the way, by Ivo Dalder, the current head of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, whose podcast we're going to play in the second half of this show, and Dalder used to be the U.S. envoy to NATO. At that, they said, and in the form of a question using the Socratic method, they said, should cities have a foreign policy?
Amazing.
And then if you think about that, and that's a bit of a far cry from cultural exchange, just simply sharing ideas on infrastructure, fighting crime, better water and sewer systems, mass transit. You know, I could understand some of that, sure. You know, hey, how'd you build that mass transit system for half the cost? You know, great. You know, lower user fees. Who'd be against that, right? But what we're going to play in the second half of the show, ladies and gentlemen, for at least 10 minutes, no longer than 14 minutes, is this podcast that's going to accent what I just said. And in my opinion, it takes it another step further. Again, that mask slowly slipping off in terms of the revelation of what the Global Cities Movement is about. And I'll mention, before we get to the bottom of the hour, that two people intimately involved in, let me see here, in Bilderberg, or, well, one, wait a minute, no, let's get this right. Two people intimately involved in the Global Cities Movement, one of whom was at Bilderberg just a few days ago in Switzerland. With that music note, let's leave that as a cliffhanger, and I'll announce it right after the break, and we'll get into that podcast. Stay tuned for more here on the National Intel Report.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And back here on the National Intel Report, your guest host for tonight, Mark Anderson, host of the regular show Stop the Presses. My guest, Hesher, and he's with Alternate Current Radio, the Boiler Room. It gets warm in that boiler room. It's a steam room of information. I've been in there. I come out 10 pounds lighter. It's just the way it works.
It's good for you. It's good for the soul.
That's it. Detox. But now a little more poison. The Global Cities Movement coming up is going to include, in its 3 days, and this is on Wednesday, June 5th, tomorrow, it's going to include Fernando Medina, the mayor of Lisbon, Portugal, who just got out of Bilderberg 2019 in Switzerland, didn't waste his breath, didn't waste any travel, he probably never even got off the plane in Portugal, probably flew straight to the U.S., and Marvin Rees. When I saw his name earlier as I was studying this stuff, I couldn't place his name at first. He's the mayor of Bristol, UK, Marvin Rees, R-E-E-S. He is way up there in the Global Parliament of Mayors. And they hosted, Marvin Rees, City of Bristol, hosted the last powwow of the Global Parliament of Mayors last October, just this past October, 2018. So very much the connections between the Global Parliament of Mayors, Bilderberg, and the Chicago Council on Global Affairs that's putting on this Global Cities Forum. Now, without further ado, we're going to play an audio clip, at least 10 minutes of it, maybe a tad more. This is from the Chicago Council promoting the forum that starts tomorrow. Listen closely.
This is Deep Dish on Global Affairs, going beyond the headlines on critical global issues. I'm Brian Hansen, and you may not know it, but we are present at the creation of a major change taking place in diplomacy. But it's not being led by the U.S. State Department. It's not being led by foreign ministries around the world. It's happening in City Hall. Or perhaps more accurately, it's happening in City Halls around the world. As cities have grown in size and power, as technology and globalization have lowered the cost of connecting across distances, cities have increasingly set out to shape their own diplomatic agendas in ways some argue have the potential to transform global politics. I'm joined today by two leading practitioners of this new wave of global diplomacy to explain how it works. I have with me Penny Abawardena, who is the New York City's Commissioner for International Affairs. She was previously Director of Girls and Women Integration at the Clinton Global Initiative, and she is the author of a new blog posted on the Council's website titled New York City's Global Experience Builds the Case for City Diplomacy. Welcome, Penny. It's great to have you on Deep Dish.
Thank you. It's exciting to be on.
And also with us is Henri-Paul Normandin, who is the Director of International Relations for the City of Montreal in Quebec, Canada. He was previously a Canadian ambassador to Haiti and the United Nations as well. Welcome, Henri-Paul. It's great to have you here, too.
Hello, Brian. A pleasure to join you.
So I do want to add that today's discussion is a little bit of a preview of the 2019 Pritzker Forum on Global Cities that the Council is hosting in Chicago. Both Penny and Henri-Paul will be on the agenda there. And this is an annual event that really probes the role of cities as actors in addressing important global issues. There's more information on the Pritzker Forum on our website, thechicagocouncil.org. Now, to jump into the conversation, Penny, I want to start with you, and I want to ask you what is a seemingly simple question. What is city diplomacy? I know we're talking about a whole lot more than just simply sister cities relationships, but what is this thing we call city diplomacy?
Yes, and I have to say, sister cities is something that we've been doing for many years. And one of the distinctions in terms of when I joined the mayor back in 2014 is, what does it look like for cities to connect on a substantive level, right? What does it look like for us to exchange best practices on policy? And so, city diplomacy for New York City has really been creating a platform for us to talk about what's working in New York City and showing the leadership of New York City on issues related to climate and immigration. And I think the reason city diplomacy right now is more important than ever, we have national governments not only here in the U.S. but around the world that are abdicating their responsibility on multilateral agreements. And so this the city diplomacy is really an engagement of cities showing the work that they're doing on behalf of their citizens, and how do we essentially promote those agendas beyond borders.
Terrific and very succinct. Henri-Paul, you have spent an entire career in diplomacy, both doing traditional national diplomacy and now doing city diplomacy. What do you see as the distinctions, and how would you like to build on Penny's really succinct definition?
Well, let's go back to the basics of what diplomacy is. And interestingly enough, there's not a universally accepted definition of diplomacy, mm-hmm. but my own is essentially the following. It's the art of pursuing your interests and objectives and influencing the decisions and behaviors of others. So that applies to a national government, but it can also apply to a city government. And in a nutshell, in terms of our interests and objectives in a city, there are many. But more and more, the quality of life of our citizens is dependent on things that are happening globally. Climate change is the most obvious example. So in Montreal and in any city, we suffer from the impact of climate change. But if we want to be effective at addressing climate change, how it impacts people in Montreal, then we cannot act simply in Montreal. We have to act globally. So that is why we engage more and more on global issues. You referred to the twinning of cities. This is still a tool that is being used, but cities have gone much beyond that now, and we're more and more active on global issues.
So I know that both of you have been actively involved in this. In the abstract, you know, we're used to cities thinking about things like sanitation and streets and all. Can you give us some examples of what this city diplomacy looks like? What's an issue that you all engage? And you've provided a couple examples, but if you could just build out, kind of, how do you go about doing this? What's an example of this? Either one of
sure,
you.
Sure, I could jump in. I have to say, sanitation and clean streets are very important to us here in New York City. What we have decided to do in terms of how we've framed our city diplomacy has been specifically through the Sustainable Development Goals. So, in 2015, Mayor de Blasio on Earth Day launched One NYC, which is our development agenda that's looking at sustainability and resiliency in New York City through a strong equity lens. It's also 2015 was the year that the global community came together and agreed to the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. What my office did was we mapped our One NYC visions to the SDG targets, and we had synergies, I think, because of our strong equity lens in all of the Sustainable Development Goals. And what we were able to do is create this program called Global Vision Urban Action, where we created a platform where we can talk about how does New York City manage our waste? How do we clean our streets or keep them safe in terms of lowering pedestrian deaths? The thing is we're doing these policies on issues that impact our everyday citizens, but there's an opportunity to learn and exchange best practices from cities and states around the world. You know, one of the ways that New York City wanted to show up is that, you know, we're as large, if not larger, than 141 countries. We get to be host to the United Nations. But we're also not just Manhattan. We have structural inequities throughout our five boroughs, and so we show up with the humility to learn from other countries. And so that was our original engagement in 2015, and over the last few years has really been through this lens of the Sustainable Development Goals. It's a language and a common framework that allows us to connect with our fellow colleagues in, you know, waste management in Nairobi or Sao Paulo. And that has been extremely useful over the last few years.
Terrific. And Henri Paul, what's an example you'd cite?
I take the example of technology. You know, technology affects us in many ways, including in new forms of the economy like Airbnb and Uber and so on. And there are also issues of human rights which pop up, and it's a challenge for cities to see how do we eventually regulate all of this activity. How do we best use technology? And it's a little bit difficult for a city alone to go at it. So what we've seen in the last few months actually is a number of cities getting together to discuss those issues on technology, how it affects us, how it affects the economy, how it affects our human rights. And we've developed a network and some initiatives, including with New York, with Amsterdam and others. And we've developed a platform called Cities for Digital Rights. So we're trying to see how each of us can best cope with those new technologies in order both to serve our citizens and also to protect them when they need to be protected.
So that's interesting, and both the examples you cited are really fall into a category of cities that are facing similar challenges around the world, being driven by whatever technology or globalization, and cities coming together to learn from one another, to exchange ideas, and to in order to address problems that everyone is facing, or cities are simultaneously facing. There's another set of actions that you all referred to in kind of the opening of city diplomacy, and that is cities working together in order to try to affect not only what happens within their borders, but trying to affect global and national policies that have an impact on those cities. I know that you all both just got back from Tokyo and for a meeting of the so-called U20, the Urban 20, which is set up in parallel to the G20. The G20 being every 6 months, leaders of these 20 large and important nations come together in order to work on important global problems. Can you talk a little bit about how cities are also coming together to try to influence global debates and global decisions that have an impact on your cities as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm going to, reflect on the Paris Climate Accord. Soon after the Trump administration came into power, they pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord. New York City, within 24 hours, signed an executive order where we committed ourselves directly to that. And, we led a coalition through the U.S. Conference of Mayors. There are over 400 U.S. cities that have committed directly to it. This is a moment in which cities, in certain countries, and I'm going to speak for us here in the U.S., have to step up, and these coalitions become very important when it's on issues like climate change that go well beyond our borders. And so for New York City, our participation in the U20 and other initiatives that are these city coalitions are really important, because we need to show that we have a collective voice. We not only did this with the Paris Climate Accord, but we also did this with the Global Compact on Migration, which was a focus of the United Nations last year, and of course the U.S. government didn't participate. We know the importance of what it means to have a diverse and inclusive community, and we have a number of different policy issues that we think are very important in this larger migration conversation. So we not only participated during the Global Compact negotiation, but we led a coalition of 50 cities. So it's been a very, it's been not only useful and effective, because clearly it's having that impact on our jobs, but it's necessary right now.
And I would say this is part of a broader movement that we call a seat at the global table, which started in 2016 in Quito around the UN Habitat conference, mm-hmm. where basically cities were trying to get a seat in innovative ways. That doesn't mean sitting in the UN as a nation state, of course, so it's different. But the U20 is a very good example. I'll give you another example. The G7, Canada hosted the G7. Last year, and
excuse me, had the mic muted a second. That's a sufficient segment of the podcast of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs going into their annual Global Cities Forum. It's either the third or fourth forum, which starts tomorrow and runs 2 days. A lot there to take in. Hesh, what do you think?
Well, a lot. Yeah, you're right. Definitely. I think it's very interesting how they're talking about sister cities exchanging best practices on policies. It made me think, why is this, independent from or superseding national policy? Is that something we really want? Do we as Americans want cities acting as national actors? Especially when talking about climate change, which there is obviously a lot of debate about, reasonably so, and this whole, the art of pursuing influences and directions applying to city governments, it just seems very strange to me. I don't know, man. It sounds pretty shady, and I noticed they used the term city borders. What happened to city limits?
Yes, isn't it all very interesting? Notice the language. As you know, Hesh, I'm very, very much into discerning and unraveling globalese, which is their language, much like legalese. It's like almost listening to lawyers when you listen to these people talk. And one of the things that the host mentioned about the two guests is that they're practitioners of a new wave of global diplomacy. Take those words in, practitioners of a new wave of global diplomacy. Those words are not random. Those words are not just pulled out of the air. These scripts are written very carefully. And note that, and this might have gotten past readers listening live or on the archive, the lady speaking, Penny Abeywardena, if I'm saying her name right, is New York City's Commissioner for International Affairs. So cities are creating departments and making taxpayers pay for international affairs departments. And the other gentleman, André-Paul Normandin, is the City of Montreal, Quebec's Director of International Relations. And they mentioned that he used to do the national thing in some past job, and now he's doing national level stuff or national type kind of things at the city level. And it's also interesting that the lady, Penny, said that, you know, it started out as sister cities, and the sister cities have been going on a long time. South Bend, Indiana has some sister city in Poland, because a lot of Polish Catholics lived in South Bend, Indiana, and still do. And all that was just simple exchanges, like I mentioned earlier, educational, cultural at the most. And a lot of it was just symbolic. And you'll notice that she alluded to that, but right away said, but now we're looking into climate change and immigration. Now, for cities to have a strong say, and an increasingly strong say, in something as sensitive as immigration, where you have an entire national border at stake, is a very strange thing, unless you consider what else they said. You'll notice that they say that, for one thing, they'll say cities are driven. They're being driven by technology and globalization. But the cities being driven by those forces suggests that those forces are passive. In other words, the cities are simply on the receiving end of the inexorable, unstoppable forces of globalization. But at the same time, they'll tell you that cities are where globalization innovations are taking place. In other words, they're really driving the things that they say are being brought upon them.
Absolutely. And it also struck me how she mentioned that New York City recommitted themselves to the Paris Climate Accord directly to it after we were nationally removed from it. So this, to me, sounds like code for shifting this to state tax funds being used to further and promote participation in the Paris Climate Accord matters after the administration removed the whole country from it. So, you know, that's like a city taxing their people in direct opposition to the government. So, I don't know that I would be shocked if the people of the city were allowed to vote on that. So you've essentially got city bureaucrats forcing new taxes on the people of the city, and just saying, well, you know, we're going to keep doing this even though the government has pulled out of it.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. You mentioned the South by Southwest 2018 thing we did in March of last year, our powwow on the outskirts of Austin to bring some counterbalance to what's becoming an increasingly global city style South by Southwest. Just like the sister cities, it's no longer about music and cultural and basic exchanges anymore. It's becoming politicized. Well, the same thing that's happened to the sister city program around the world, it's happening specifically in Austin at the March of every year, the annual springtime South by Southwest event. And they also said on this podcast we just heard from the Chicago Council that the Global Compact of Migration was the other thing, Hesh, besides the Paris Agreement, where the cities are balking and saying, well, the federal government of the U.S. and maybe other national governments, they don't like this. Well, we want in. That's if you're on a boat and you're floating in the middle of the ocean, that's mutiny.
Absolutely.
They're like a type of municipal mutineers. That I'll call them the municipal mutineers. And they're trying to soft pedal it a little bit. They're trying to say, well, we just want a seat at the table. But while they say they want a seat at the table with one hand, in the other hand, they're saying, well, you know, if you don't do something we like at the national level, we're just going to rebel. If you want a tighter border and border defense, we say let them in because we're diverse and inclusive. Diverse and inclusive, excuse me, as Penny pointed out, those are code words for open borders. Those are code words for inclusive, meaning everyone's included except those that oppose these things. And, you know, so you have this retrograde motion coming from the larger cities, New York City and others, Montreal here in this case. And so this is very presumptuous, and it fits what I was saying, where they went from a soft sell, and now there's a little more pepper in the stew last year, and now this year there's even a little more pepper in the stew. It's getting pretty picoso, as they say in speaking Spanish, meaning very spicy, very hot, a little hard to swallow. But you just need to know what to look for when you go through the ingredients and read the label of what's in this thing. And that's what we're trying to do here, is read the label. And this is a rebellion. This, I won't call it secession, but it sure smells like the beginnings of it. Like they want to secede from the power structure, network through the cities that are their cohorts. And through that city network that they're, you know, cross-pollinating in, they simply declare themselves as having an independent taxation and policy outlook and implementation, independent of the nation states that they inhabit.
Right. It means to sort of read between the lines here, to me, that means there's a high likelihood that they'll pick and choose what sorts of policies they're going to impose. They'll pick and choose what national laws they're going to uphold. You used borders and immigration as an example. When you hear city officials talking like that and affecting policy like that, that is an open cry to people that are here illegally, going to those cities, knowing that that city has a different take on it than the nation does. And as this grows and grows, it provides more opportunities, more places of sanctuary, if you will, for people that don't want to adhere to the national rules, laws, and standards.
Exactly. It'll create a mixture of different rules, and the word will quickly get out to would-be illegal entrants into the country that, hey, while the United States might not want us there as a nation, Houston, Texas sure does, or Dallas does, or Santa Fe, New Mexico does, or wherever.
Yeah, exactly. And it also struck me the way they were talking about regulating technology. Henri mentioned Uber and Airbnb. So there's another yet another crossover with Silicon Valley people who have similar identity politics and political agendas as these. So, you know, that obviously Silicon Valley is in on with these meetings and these types of people and globalization as a whole, and the sister city thing and global cities. So you can really see the way that these kinds of initiatives will also drive and intersect with technology and the rules and regulations of things like Uber and Airbnb, which are huge right now when it comes to our national economy and all that.
Hey, Hesh, could I talk you into hanging on a little longer for tonight's show, or do you got to go?
I'll be right here with you, Mark.
A little bit longer. Thanks a lot, Hesh. We'll be right back here for the second hour of the National Intel Report.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.